This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to the In Focus podcast. My name is Jayant Sriram and I'm your host for today. Over the course of this week and the next, we begin our detailed analysis of the assembly elections in four states, Assam, West Bengal, Kerala and Tamil Nadu, and one union territory, that's Puducherry. Voting has already begun in some phases in Assam and West Bengal, and in Kerala, Tamil Nadu and Puducherry, it is just around the corner. Before we look in some detail at each state going to the polls though, and break down the flavour of each contest, we thought we would use this episode to take a broader perspective on these elections as a whole and try and give you a sense of what they mean from national level politics. For the BJP, which is trying to make inroads into areas not considered its traditional strongholds, and for the opposition parties, which are trying to stop its rise. I'm joined for this episode by The Hindu's associate editor, Verghese George. Verghese, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for making time for us today.
Thank you, Jayant. Nice to be with you again.
Right. So before we get into our sort of individual analysis of each state and one union territory that's going in for assembly elections, polling has already started in a couple. We thought we'd get you onto the podcast to discuss some broader trends that we should be looking for at these elections when taken as a whole. So, you know, and that sort of would set up this kind of individual analysis of each state. So the first thing that struck me, Verghese, is that, you know, four of these states and one union territory, these are all outside what you might consider the BJP's traditional stronghold, the Hindi heartland. So, and these are areas, many of them, in which they're trying to make inroads.
Right.
So, you know, how does that set up the dynamic of these elections?
Well, and as you rightly put it, this is outside the Hindu heartland of BJP dominance. But BJP has been very relentless in its pursuit to enter into these areas. In 2016, they made a remarkable victory by winning Assam, where the BJP government is defending its turf and then trying to get a second innings there. So, but West Bengal is another state where the BJP did not exist until 2019. But 2019, they made a success in the Lok Sabha election. In Kerala and Tamil Nadu, the picture is even bleaker for the BJP and its ambitions. But still, the fact that the BJP is relentless and it is very determined to enter into these areas is what makes this set of elections remarkable and notable. Now, how will this impact the BJP's fortunes nationally? If they do actually manage to turn West Bengal into a stronghold of the BJP, and if they manage to retain, hold on to Assam, we are now not even thinking in terms of whether they can do something in Tamil Nadu or Kerala. But still, if we can win these two states, which is possible in my opinion, that is going to be an extremely, extremely significant victory for the Hindutva nationalism project that the BJP is currently pursuing, because it is entering and reinforcing itself in areas that are not Hindi speaking, but the regional languages, regional cultures, which are very, very strongly entrenched in Assam, in West Bengal, in Tamil Nadu and in Kerala. So we are not yet talking about Tamil Nadu and Kerala, but West Bengal and Assam are very well within the reach of the BJP, in Assam as a second innings and West Bengal possibly as a first government of the BJP.
Right. So yeah, from a national politics point of view, we are looking at, we're not yet sort of talking about the BJP making any a potential impact in the southern states, though that's still an open question, of course. But we are, I mean, the kind of major trend that we are looking at is whether they can sort of gain a new stronghold in West Bengal and keep hold of Assam. Now, the one sort of big political question surrounding this election is that this is the first election after the discussion about the CAA and the NRC. So, you know, what is it about those states that really, what are the major political trends in those states that we have to look for?
Well, that is, I mean, the NRC, the triad, citizenship triad, which comprise the National Population Register, the National Register of Citizens and the Citizenship Amendment Act. It is it's a campaign debate in Kerala and in Tamil Nadu also, but only in a peripheral sense. Assam and West Bengal are two states where this new citizenship regime has a direct bearing. The idea that the people who came from Bangladesh, which was earlier East Bengal and then later East Pakistan, the idea that India is a homeland for Hindu refugees of anywhere in the world, that is what is enshrined in this citizenship regime. There are other religions also listed there, barring Muslims, barring Islam. There are other five other religions that are listed in the Citizenship Amendment Act. But focus of the citizenship regime is unmistakable, which is to shelter and give citizenship to people who had to flee from, in this context, from Bangladesh. Now, both in West Bengal and in Assam, this is a hot button topic. Now, there is a huge chunk of people, Bengali speaking population, that is in Assam. They are largely being thought of as, a majority of them at least are being thought of as people who came from Bangladesh over several decades of migration. In Bangladesh, in West Bengal also, there is a clearly noticeable population of people who fled Bangladesh in 47, in 1971. So these are people who have voting rights. But in 2003, one set of amendments to citizenship law made the citizenship of a lot of these people suspect in the eyes of the law. Subsequently, the 2019 Citizenship Amendment Act created a route for them to apply for Indian citizenship and get it. But the irony and of the situation is that the people who are seeking Indian citizenship under the 2019 CAA, they are required to first declare that they are illegal entrants into the country, and they were persecuted in Bangladesh, and therefore they are seeking Indian citizenship. If you look at the language of the act itself. Now, the rules of how this will be enacted, how this can be carried out, that remains unmade. Those rules have not been made. So, the BJP has been asked in campaigns in Assam and West Bengal by different groups, including the opposition parties, when are the rules coming? Now, there's a selective use, invocation of the Citizenship Amendment Act, both in Assam and in West Bengal. So, BJP is also not very enthusiastically projecting it, because there are other issues that are coming into play, because the ethnic populations of Assam are opposed to the idea of giving citizenship to anybody, whether they are Hindus or Muslims or Christians. An ethnic population politics in Assam, at least in principle, in theory, they are opposed to giving citizenship to anybody from outside. In West Bengal, on the other hand, the question of citizenship for people coming from Bangladesh or who have come from Bangladesh, again, is a little complicated an issue, because when the issues of religion and language comes into play, there are contradictory forces at play. So the BJP is trying to sort of, BJP did say that the law will be implemented, but the emphasis is not really great on that. Broadly speaking, we could say that in West Bengal, the BJP is promising the implementation of CAA, while in Assam, BJP is rather silent on the issue. In among the opposition parties who are opposed to the CAA, they are also in West Bengal a little silent, because any opposition to CAA has widely been seen as some kind of an appeal to the Muslims, which they do not want to be making at this point in time. So in all, though the new citizenship regime is of very significant bearing for people's lives in Assam and West Bengal, the debate on it is rather muted, and different segments of the population have different ideas. Even people who are opposed to the CAA, people are opposed to it for various reasons. Some people are opposed to it on the grounds that it is religiously discriminatory. Some people are opposed to it for the fact that it is actually opening up a floodgate, not only for people who are already here, but people who might come. In Assam, one of the major concerns that the ethnic groups have is that there are roughly 14 million Hindus who are still in Bangladesh. They fear that a new citizenship regime might actually open, incentivize their migration into India. So citizenship debate has become such a complicated issue because it is being framed and debated and understood by different sects and segments and political parties in West Bengal and Assam. And therefore, the BJP is less than enthusiastic in trying to project a uniform narrative on this issue that, okay, refugees are welcome in this country as long as you are a minority in their, your first place of origin.
Right, okay. So one question that I should have possibly asked you preceding this is the fact that, you know, when you take this particular set of states that are going into elections now in particular, I'm just going to read out the, what I want to ask you is the aspect of Muslim politics, because just to read out the sort of updated figures, percentage of total population, Assam percentage of total population of Muslims, 34.22, West Bengal, 27%, and Kerala also close to 27%, 26.56. So, you know, that's these are three states with amongst the highest Muslim populations in India. It's a significant percentage of the population. And, you know, how has that framed your reporting, how you see this election playing out?
Well, so we in West Bengal and Assam, we see, and again in Assam, we have the experiment of a Muslim party, which is called the AUDF, which is essentially the catchment area of the AUDF is Bengali-speaking Muslims who have migrated to Assam over several decades from what was undivided Bengal. So that is one Muslim party which has had its significant success in the last 4 or 5 years, I would say. They've been growing. So this time they are in alliance with the Congress and left parties. So that constitutes a main opposition to the BJP in Assam. Now, in West Bengal, there is a new entrant, which is called the Indian Secular Front, which is being led by a cleric, this gentleman called Abbas Siddiqui, a Pir Sada, as they are called. He's venerated as a saint. The ISF is part of the left Congress alliance again in West Bengal. Now, so they in Kerala, if you look at it, Kerala has a political party which is broadly a Muslim party. It is called the Indian Union Muslim League, which is part of the Congress-led United Democratic Front. Now, what is of import here is that in the last 10 years or so, the Muslim representation in Indian politics is significantly falling. The chances of a Muslim member of parliament or a member of a legislative assembly getting elected from a mainstream party has suddenly shrunk. I won't say suddenly shrunk, but it has been shrinking over the years. And now it has reached a level where it is very difficult, or the mainstream political parties usually, they're not very enthusiastic to field Muslim candidates, fearing a religious polarization, which could actually go against them. As a result, we are living in an era where the overall Muslim representation in politics, political scientists have pointed out, is perhaps the lowest since elections began in 1952 after the first election, from the first general election onwards. Now, in response to this situation, Muslim intellectuals and Muslim political elite have devised or trying to devise responses to this thing. So, one response was was led by the Hyderabad-based Asaduddin Owaisi, who went and took part in Bihar elections in 2020. Now, he had plans to enter West Bengal, but then the entry of Abbas Siddiqui sort of changed the situation so much that he himself has become a figure there. What will happen as while the Muslims are trying to come under a political platform of their own? How are they defining themselves? In ISF's case, Abbas Siddiqui is saying that we are not a Muslim party. We are a party of all disadvantaged and dispossessed and poor people. He says that we represent a class politics of the poor peasants and the landless and etc. etc. And he also has given tickets to candidates from all castes, including the upper caste and the Dalits and the backwards, etc. from the Hindu community. Will that be an acceptable formulation? Will that actually... or will it actually create a Hindu backlash in the sense that there is already a Hindu consolidation of Hindu wards under the BJP platform? BJP has been successful in doing that thing. the idea that there is a Muslim party on the other side, will it actually further aggravate the religious polarization in West Bengal? Will it have the same effect in Assam? Perhaps it might, because in Assam, one of the campaign points that the BJP makes is that if you vote against the BJP for the Congress-led alliance, you are voting to make Badruddin Ajmal, who is the chief of the AUDF, the chief minister of Assam. So that is a campaign talking point. So, but the larger question of how Muslim politics will emerge in a situation of Hindu consolidation on the one hand and Muslim marginalization from politics and political power on the other hand. How the Muslim community will be responding to this thing? So we have various models that are in play, that are at play in this election. You have a particular model in Kerala, which is quite an established model. We have one model in Assam, which was established earlier itself, but this time it is in alliance with the National Secular Party, which is a Congress. And in West Bengal, a different model is also. So how this will be playing out and shaping, this will be of interest to watch. This will have major critical implications for the way Indian democracy evolves. So that is one point I think we should be watching out in this set of elections.
Right. So we will sort of get to a larger question to wrap up this episode. But Varghese, just before that, we should touch on just a couple of aspects on Kerala and Tamil Nadu, since we're doing an overall kind of primer episode on these elections. So in Kerala, the unique thing is that it's the only state that has a communist government. In Tamil Nadu this time, it's being watched very closely because it's the first election following the demise of two, you know, giant leaders who dominated politics in that state for decades. You know, how is that going to play out in these states?
Well, I think, again, while in Assam and West Bengal, two places where regional, linguistic, cultural politics has deep roots, BJP has already made remarkable inroads. Regardless of the outcome, BJP can actually claim. BJP is actually trying to win power in West Bengal. But regardless of the outcome, BJP is now a force to reckon with in West Bengal and in Assam. Kerala and Tamil Nadu actually tell a different story, but the direction of the story is not very dissimilar from what we've been seeing elsewhere. The idea that there is a barrier in terms of culture or religion, might still remain a barrier, or language that will prevent the BJP from expanding into certain areas, that is coming under question, and this election is going to give us a lot of explanations that might surprise a lot of traditional wisdom here. In Kerala, the only place there is a communist government and only place where the CPIM and the left parties remain a strong force, it is possible this time that the incumbent government could win a second term. If it happens, that will be remarkable in itself, but that will also be the triggering a new political realignment in Kerala. What I mean to say is that if the Congress cannot return to power after a break of 5 years, that I think will fundamentally challenge the Congress's ability to be a viable political force in Kerala. In the instance of the Congress collapsing in Kerala, that will open up space for new conversations, new realignments. BJP will have a chance there. In Tamil Nadu, the Dravidian politics as we knew it could have come to an end, we could actually say, with the passing of the matriarch Jayalalitha and the patriarch M. Karunanidhi, which happened between the last assembly election and this assembly election. Now we have Stalin, who is actually taken over the mantle from his father, but will, regardless again of the outcome of what happens in this election, the idea that the Dravidian politics is eternally made Tamil Nadu an impenetrable fort for Hindutva nationalism may not be true if you look ahead. Because in a political landscape where we can easily see it is not a fully occupied political space, there are opportunities for new alignments, there are opportunities for new political slogans and agenda to be taken up. I think the BJP will be relentless, and BJP can make a very serious bid in both in Kerala and Tamil Nadu. There is a limiting factor that has to be noted before we conclude that topic. BJP has an innate inability to speak to these people, population, peoples of Tamil Nadu and Kerala, where the language, the political rhetoric that they use elsewhere may not be as effective, and quite often it can actually have the reverse, the negative effect of going against the BJP. So that is a political communication and that the BJP has yet to fine-tune and customize for the populations of Kerala and Tamil Nadu. With that caveat in place, we have to brace for BJP's serious bids in both Tamil Nadu and Kerala in the coming years. Though, again, I have to underscore and emphasize the fact that we are not talking about this election in terms of BJP's southern presence. But I think the idea that the BJP, there are certain geographical and linguistic barriers that BJP cannot overcome, that premise has been questioned very seriously in the recent years, and I think this election could be indicative in the same direction further.
Right, and last question, and taking off from your previous answer, it did strike me in the middle that we've spoken about assembly elections in four states across the country without hardly ever mentioning the Congress, which is, of course, a sign of the times.
Right.
How do you see opposition politics and the BJP's politics sort of, post this assembly election, depending on the results, how do they both go forward?
So for the Congress party, this will be going to be a significant election as well, because the inverse of the fact that these are all states which are peripheral to BJP's politics until recent times, is also true, which is that these are all states which has had a very strong opposition politics until recent times. Even when the BJP won in 2014, these states have largely been against the BJP. How the opposition politics of this country will be evolving in the future? Because now, as we all agree that there is a crisis in opposition politics in this country, they are not in a position to articulate a viable alternative to the BJP in terms of personalities and program. Now, both in Kerala and in Tamil Nadu, Rahul Gandhi has been campaigning very hectically and hard. If the Congress win, Kerala leading the alliance and is part of the winning alliance in Tamil Nadu, that will be a major boost for Rahul Gandhi's image. I do not know how much of Rahul Gandhi's own leadership qualities may be contributing to Congress's performance in either Tamil Nadu or Kerala, at least in terms of interpreting those outcomes, assuming that the Congress makes a good show there. It's a viable, it's a legitimate argument to be made that, okay, Rahul Gandhi contributed to Congress performance if it actually does well. And if the Congress does well in Assam, which it could, in alliance with these new partners, including AUDF, then again that could be good for Rahul Gandhi. And Congress has very little at stake in West Bengal, which is it is part of an alliance with the left in West Bengal, and nobody is taking that alliance any seriously in terms of the electoral outcome is concerned. But if the BJP does not win as it wants to, and then it will be a very big booster for opposition politics in general, because Mamata Banerjee, though she is not Congress, she is not BJP either. She's been a very combative opponent of the BJP. So opposition politics in general will be shaped significantly depending on the outcome of this election, particularly the future of Rahul Gandhi, which has always been in the future for the last several years now, will be more imminent in terms of the pressure on him to either assume a formal responsibility and go ahead, or the doubts that it might cast on his capabilities and his abilities in the event of the Congress doing very badly and the BJP doing very well in Assam and West Bengal.
Right. I think so, Verghese, we'll wrap up this episode here, and I think we'll sort of return to this post these election results and see what trends we can read into this. So thank you for joining us once again on the podcast today and making time for us.
Thank you. Thank you, Jayan. I greatly enjoyed talking with you. Look forward to the next one soon enough.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.